Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Off the top of my head, let's just say gun violence. Gun violence. It has to stop.
The lack of opportunities for people, I guess, to get jobs, to provide for their families.
The economy in general is it's not in too good a shape.
Those are just some of the issues sending voters to the polls this election season. And there are so many more to consider nationally, locally. And tonight we're going to analyze the issues and the races as we discuss what's at stake. We begin tonight with Ebony McMorris, White House correspondent for the American Radio Network, and Charles Ellison, political analyst and publisher of the BNote.com. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Ebony, thank you so much for joining the conversation. Charles, good to hear from you again.
Hey, good to talk with you, Earl.
Okay. Ebony, can you kind of set the stage for us right now from the perspective of where you see things? What's happening right now?
If I think an article earlier that many of the stations were quoting, the title of the article kind of sets the mood, which is pollsters have no... I'm not going to curse, have no effing idea what is going to happen in this election. But here is what we do know is that the president has called this the fight for the soul of the nation. We got 435 House seats up for grabs, 35 Senate seats, 36 governorships, and over 44 million Americans, 45 million participated in early voting. And this has helped me to make this the largest midterm turnout ever. And I think we can't gloss over that, because why is it the largest? We are in such a heightened political time where we've got white supremacy on the ballot. But in addition to that, you just played some recordings of what many voters are going to the ballot and voting for. The latest Gallup poll said 49% of registered voters say the economy is extremely important to them. They're going to the polls on that, followed by abortion with 42%, and crime is coming in at a close third. So even with everything that we're feeling, some people feel like we're in a recession, inflation, high gas prices. The question is, what are people going into these polls, and what are they feeling in the midst of having all these key Senate races that will really help determine the balance of power?
Yeah, and by the way, I should have said American Urban Radio Network. Apologies.
Please drill down on black. No,
okay.
Like you.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that, Charles. Obviously, your wheelhouse is Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the big race there in the Senate race. What's your feeling about that right now?
You know, I think that we, especially in the modern media industrial complex, need to stop, expecting results from elections on the day of, on the night of,
right.
Particularly in these very contentious political times. We keep setting ourselves up for failure. We keep setting our audience up for failure, mm-hmm. especially with the stakes so high. We keep expecting results the day of or the night of. And I think you're going to see some races where you're not going to get the results tonight. You may not get the results this week, and that's okay. Like, everyone should take their time, especially when there's so much voter suppression going on out there. We are seeing all sorts of shenanigans happening in polls. Even in PA, we've got one crucial county in northeastern Pennsylvania, Luzerne County, where the polls have been extended until 10 p.m. Because they have some issues. There's some ballots that aren't available, some issues going on at certain locations. So they're like, you know what, we're going to extend the closing time. Polls close at 8 p.m. in Pennsylvania. We're going to extend it till 10 p.m. in this particular county. Things that we are seeing is that, at least in places like Pennsylvania, for example, the early youth vote is 318%, like 318% compared to the last midterm. The black vote in Pennsylvania is over 1,700% compared to 2018. And the woman vote, the early woman vote, is 725% compared to 2018. We're also seeing some big black youth and also woman voter numbers in places like Wisconsin. I mean, so we're seeing a tremendous amount of firewall that Democrats created for themselves through the early voting and the mail-in balloting. We see Democrats nationally having about a 10-point edge, over Republicans in early mail-in ballots. So they provided themselves a real nice firewall, and there were expectations that because Republicans don't trust, Republican rank and file don't trust mail-in ballot, that much, because remember, they're the election denier party.
Yeah.
They were like waiting till election day to finally do their thing. So I think people need to just right now, especially for the next few hours, just stay calm, get some rest. Don't stay glued to the TV all night.
Yeah, it's almost like waiting on Powerball.
Right. Look, you might be better with the Powerball ticket at this point. I mean, even when, I'm glad you said that, because even when we look at states like Georgia with Senator Raphael Warnock versus Herschel Walker, which is one of the one of the most watched races, we probably won't see anything happen until December when there's probably a runoff, and that's because of the Georgia law requiring them to the victor to have a 50% win on election day. If no one gets it, then we have a runoff. And many of these were set by Republicans in office, and we have to remember that. So, I mean, whether we're looking at that or even, I mean, I'm paying, of course, like you said, close attention to Pennsylvania, where we have John Fetterman against. It still amazes me Dr. Oz is on the ballot.
Yeah. Yeah,
I can't.
But you know, that's America. Anybody can run, and I think that is suggesting.
No, but literally anybody.
Yeah, I mean that's true, and I mean that's, you know, Ronald Reagan was an actor. Okay, you know, Donald Trump, the business person, TV star.
And we have a situation here, right, Ebony Harold, where like 20, 25 years ago, okay, this was a legitimate political party, the Republican Party. I could confidently say that back then, whether you agreed with them or not.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, this is not a legitimate political party we're dealing with. And so they're letting anyone in. I mean, you're dealing with a white nationalist domestic terror organization that's engaged in stochastic terrorism, the type that ended up and 12 brothers and sisters being gunned down in Buffalo, New York earlier this year. I mean, you know, that was re-engineered by rhetoric coming out of the Republican Party. So they're letting anyone in, and anyone in who's destroying voting rights, who's destroying affirmative action, who's destroying the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments, the Reconstruction Acts. I mean, that's a deal breaker. I mean, these are things that are the very foundation for our legal humanity as black people in the United States. I mean, if you can't give me those basics, like, you're not a legitimate political party to me.
Yeah.
You are against my survival.
Hold on 1 second. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is our election 2022 coverage. We're talking about the issues and providing analysis for some of the biggest races right now. Just a reminder, Virginia polling places are closed at 7 o'clock. If you're in line, you should be allowed to vote. DC and Maryland polling places are expected to close at 8 o'clock, but the same goes there. If you're in line, you can be allowed to vote. I want to talk just a little bit about, you know, some of the hyper-local things. I'm sure we're going to talk about them a little bit later with Charles Robinson with Maryland Public Television after 7:30. But I do want to talk about some of the major issues that we're just seeing locally. For example, we have Initiative 82 that, if approved, would give minimum wage for workers who receive tips. And we have question 4 in Maryland, the decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana. I'll start with you, Charles. Your thoughts about not necessarily the specific issues here, but are we finding kind of a progressive move, whether it's economics or maybe even as it relates to this weed legislation in Maryland, a change in the way that these issues are being addressed?
We probably are. We're probably seeing a shift in how the outcome of specific pieces of a potential policy like marijuana legalization in Maryland. That's all going to depend on what does early voter turnout, what does youth voter turnout look like in a state like Maryland, right? You know, because that's an issue that's important to young voters. But we don't have, like, Maryland's not a big battleground state.
True.
It got over with its rather contentious primary. So, I mean, it seems like Westmore is kind of coasting into the governorship as far as this is concerned. I would like to see, I haven't seen those numbers yet, how older voters are going to, especially older black voters. I think we underestimate how uncomfortable older black voters are about decriminalized marijuana. Despite all the criminalization of marijuana, despite all the devastation that the war on drugs has ravaged on black communities, older black people, especially in places like Prince George's County, right? I mean, are a little bit uncomfortable about, like, having to step outside church and smell weed. I'm just being frank. These are, like, conversations that I have with faithful black older super voters. And those are the types of voters in a state like Maryland who tend to turn out in election cycles that are viewed as off cycle. It all depends on how much does the young voter in Maryland, especially, like, you know, the young Gen Z, millennial, and primarily black, because the black voter is a very major voting block in Maryland. What's their turnout going to look like? I haven't seen those numbers yet. I'm waiting anxiously to see what that's going to look like.
Well, I will say this, and then Ebony, I'll let you jump in. Mm-hmm. As it pertains to the decriminalization of marijuana, I think, my biggest concern is if that happens, then what happens to the people who have gone to jail for the same thing that is now legal? And that's not just a Maryland thing, because we're seeing this decriminalization thing happen across the country. And so you have a lot of, black people who have spent time in jail for, and may still be in jail, for smaller amounts of marijuana. And if this were to happen, people are going to get wealthy off of this, as they have done in Washington State and Colorado, and are getting wealthy in parts, in some parts of California. And so I think there's an issue of equity that needs to be addressed there. But Ebony, please go right ahead.
No, I'm glad you're actually talking about that, because I do a Friday show called Business for the Culture, and the issue of marijuana is one that we've talked about a lot. Of course, we know that African Americans have been unfairly targeted when it comes to marijuana possession. So when we saw the president hand down executive order on marijuana, we saw that it was just, at the federal level, and everyone was wondering what's going to happen now on the state level, who's going to adopt that and follow through. But then how do we begin to repair our communities after that? Because we are still also locked out of the industry at alarming rates. And I've been doing a lot of studying when it comes to the issue of marijuana. One of the biggest things I do hope, which we'll see what happens, is the president also wants to reschedule marijuana,
yeah,
which would be huge. And we've not seen that happen. But I think if we get to a point where we're talking about marijuana becoming legal, then we also then have to look at, I know there are several states, I can't remember off the top of my head, who have programs for helping those who even want to get into the cannabis industry, because there's issues with lending when it comes to that. There are states that also have put in place measures to help those who may even be, if they do come out, are able to rehabilitate, are also able to enter back into society. It is such a multi-layered issue, because America has been so entrenched and ingrained and profited so much off of this system that it's almost hard to find your way out of it equitably.
Yeah. Yeah. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about some of the local and some of the national issues, some of the races for election 2022. We are looking at the midterm elections right now, and this is really considered the most consequential midterm election in decades. If you have a comment, if you have a question, I also want to know, you know, if you came to the polls, if you voted today, if you voted at all, what was the issue that drove you to the poll? Was it crime? Was it the economy? Was it Roe v. Wade? What was it? 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I know I need to take a break. I want to thank Charles Ellison for sharing some time with us. Charles, always appreciate your intellect and your voice on this program. Of course, Ebony is going to stay with us. And you, the listener, Jacqueline, calling from Upper Marlboro, we're going to talk to you next. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. And don't forget, after 8 o'clock tonight, we will have updates on election 2022. I'll be giving those during the Quiet Storm. I'm Harold Fisher. Stay with us. We'll be back with the Insight segment on the Daily Drum in just a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about election 2022. We're talking about the issues. We're talking about the races, consequential issues and races that could change the way the country is moving. We continue with Ebony McMorris, White House correspondent for the American Urban Radio Network. Also joining us now, Whitley Yates, political analyst and director of diversity for the Indiana Republican Party. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go to our guests, let me take a phone call from Jacqueline, calling from Upper Marlboro. Jacqueline, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. Go right ahead.
Good. I wanted to call in about the marijuana topic.
Sure.
My brother earlier this evening, maybe a few moments ago, mentioned how we don't realize how the, I hate to say, the baby boomers really do not want marijuana in the streets. And it's so true. I just went to vote earlier this morning, maybe around 7 a.m. at our elementary school. And when I saw that question, I said, oh, wow, because it's so impactful for me. I graduated from Salisbury University, and I just moved to New Carrollton, and it's a beautiful apartment community. But every time my aunt comes over, she goes, does it always have to smell like marijuana? And I'm just like, aunt, you know, it's some people's homes, and I realize, you know, how impactful and great it is that people don't go to jail for a little bit of marijuana, but they think it's like, oh, it's the worst thing in the world and things of that nature.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is a very reasonable consideration, even with the decriminalization of marijuana here in the District of Columbia. As I leave work every night, I know who's getting it in the cars in front of me. You know, so yeah, you know, I realize that, and it is a balance that the voters are going to have to certainly look at. Jacqueline, thank you so much for your comment. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Whitley Yates, calling from Indiana. Thank you so much for joining the program. Do you believe that there is going to be a red wave? And what part, if any, do you think black voters are playing in that?
So I'm going to be honest. I do believe.
Please be honest. Please be honest.
Going to be a red wave. I don't know if it's going to be a tsunami. I don't know if it's going to be
a ripple,
you know, a high tide. But I do believe that in many of the races that we see are pretty close, you're going to see Republicans prevail. And a lot of that just has to do with the messaging of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. They seem to have siloed their message specifically to the Black community in pockets about abortion, and they have forgot about inflation. And a lot of their talking points have been on a national level, and it's not been local. I also feel like they've kind of segregated Black men, the people who have been running, and they've kind of been made some derogatory comments, specifically Stacey Abrams, about Black men and some of the other Democratic pundits. And so what I think you're going to see is a concerted effort for Black people to either vote down ballot or to not show up at all. There's been this movement called No Tangibles, No Vote, specifically from descendants of slaves that are basically fed up with the entire political system, all sides and both parties. And so that does not play well for Democrats that rely on the Black vote to stay in positions of power.
I got to tell you, though, Whitley, you said, let's be honest. So let's be honest. Let's talk about, for example, you know, Ron Johnson in Wisconsin. OK, mm-hmm. Not necessarily a person who is known by his statements of sharing comments that would promote racial unity. And let's be really, really clear that the current Republican Party is the party that has more than 300 election deniers from top ballots all the way down. How, I could almost agree with you, but that whole election denier thing really makes a lot of people uncomfortable. It makes rank and file Republicans uncomfortable. It makes independents uncomfortable. It makes Democrats uncomfortable. And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. It sounds like, when you played Little League ball, you know, if I didn't win, you cheated. How do you address that? That sounds like sore loser politics to me.
Sore losers. Yes. So what's interesting about election denial is that we've seen it on both sides. Stacey Abrams mm-hmm. refused to concede and said that the election was stolen from her. Hillary Clinton also said the exact same things. It seems as though when a mass majority of people vote in a specific way and another party doesn't get their way, there are conspiracies and thoughts around, well, something must have been rigged. And it's honestly just cognitive dissonance over the fact that you lost. We haven't seen any data to support any type of widespread election fraud. And so to the people that believe that, people can be wrong and strong every day. But the truth is, Republicans tend to show up to the polls, and Democrats have to be pushed to the polls. They need a reason. They need a face. They need something to either vote against or hate. And the problem with that is, if you don't create enough entertainment around the political process, around voting, and you don't turn out your base, it really doesn't matter. And that is what you have in this case.
But let me ask you something. Mm-hmm. Whitley, can you keep your job with what you just said?
Absolutely.
I mean, you just said there's been no evidence of widespread election fraud, and yet that whole issue seems to be a strategy. I mean, I hope you don't need me to send you $5.
No, you, our Secretary of State has said this. Our Secretary of State here, she's Republican, Holly Sullivan, she said this. Our chairman has also said this. And so I think we are in a place where President Biden is a president. I don't know what it is people are looking for, what they're wanting. We're heading into another presidential cycle. I'm not quite sure what it is that people are looking for right now. But what is interesting, though, when it comes to Republicans of color running, the truth is all skin folk and kin folk. And we know that for a fact. At the same time, what you see is in heavily Democratic districts, you haven't had viable Republican options. And so when you give a viable Republican option to a Democratic opposition, you're seeing people say, well, look, we've been voting this way for a really long time, and we're in the exact same place or worse. Yeah. And so what is it going to hurt to give someone else a try? And that, to me, is powerful for Republicans and dangerous for Democrats.
Let me go to Charles Robinson, senior correspondent for Maryland Public Television, joining the conversation now. Hey, Charles. Oops. Do we lose him? We're going to try to pick him. Let's try to pick him back up. So, Ebony, your thoughts about what Whitley is saying, because it seems to me that she is part of the traditional GOP, political thought and not the...
But I don't agree. I mean, I don't disagree.
Yeah.
In fact, we saw that, you know, in many articles and stories and polls came out, specifically even for Georgia, the big question was, when we look at Black men in particular, which has been an ongoing issue, who Black men will turn out for, or looking at Black men some turning away from the Democratic. It wasn't that they necessarily even always wanted that candidate that was Republican. It was because they were tired and they felt like they weren't getting anything from Democrats. So they weren't keeping their promises. And so instead of, you know, doubling down and putting even more pressure on Democratic elected officials, we saw many turn to, we saw some, now, let me not say many, we see some saying, I'm just not going to vote, or say that I'm going to see who's running in the Democratic lane. I've interviewed, I've talked to so many people who have said this. I don't think we've talked about as much in the past, but I think that it is very important. You know, I almost look at the numbers when we talk about Republicans and Democrats and what's really happening versus what people think is happening, almost like consumer confidence numbers. You can tell me that numbers are going for this or gas prices are improving, but if I'm not feeling that for myself, it doesn't matter what your numbers are showing. And so I think that's where, even when it comes to Biden, when you look at his record and what he has been able to roll out, if Americans every day are sitting at home and they're looking at their bills and they're talking to people and having these kitchen table conversations, it doesn't matter what you say, what the numbers look like, I'm telling you how I feel. There was even a AP Votecast poll that says a third of Americans say they've fallen behind financially. That was twice as high as the number of U.S. voters who said the same thing in 2020.
Yeah.
So it's almost a battle of what is versus what isn't. And people vote on how they feel, what they think is happening in their world.
We have Charles Robinson from Maryland Public Television back on the line. Charles, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Happy to be with you, Harold. You know, this is one of my favorite times of the year where I get to see the outcome of an election.
Well, let kind of set the stage right now for where we are in Maryland. Obviously, the gubernatorial race is at the top of the list. But as we were talking about before you came on, we have, you know, Maryland question four about, you know, marijuana. We've seen the congressional districts change in Maryland. I know my congressional representative has changed in my area, and it has for a lot of people.
Well, part of it is, you know, there was the state legislature drew a map.
Right.
It was not a map that Governor Hogan liked. He sent his surrogates out, and he sued to get the map changed because he felt as though it favored Democrats. New map was redrawn, Court of Special Appeals approved it, and so you have areas like the 1st Congressional District, which extends from northern Baltimore County to Harford County, over to Cecil, Caroline, and down to the Eastern Shore. That's the U.S. Congressional District that Andy Harris currently represents, and he's up against Heather Mazur, who many in your audience will remember. She ran for governor as the first gay candidate to ever seek that office. Today, I think the district is still primarily conservative, but she has made inroads by raising an enormous amount of money. The other one that is closer to you is the 6th District, which involves Neil Perrett, who is a delegate from far western Maryland, and, of course, David Trone, who is in United States House of Representatives. throne has an enormous advantage when it comes to money. And the question continues to be, does Trone have enough juice? Because they carved up part of his district in Gaithersburg, and that meant that he doesn't have as strong a Democratic base as he had in previous runs.
Yeah. And that, and then, of course, we have this Dan Cox, Wes Moore competition. And I would have said, if you told me a year ago that either one of these two men would be vying for the governor's mansion in Maryland, I probably would not have believed it.
Well, here's the interesting part, Harold. You know, Wes Moore's claim to fame is the book he wrote, The Other Wes Moore, mm-hmm. which is a book that chronicles two men who have the same name, but one who is, I believe, currently still in prison, and the other who went on to become a Rhodes Scholar and run the Robin Hood Foundation. You know, in the current climate, it would not have been popular to have a person who has never run for public office to run for governor. But guess who flipped that idea? Larry Hogan.
Larry Hogan, yeah.
And when you look back at it, you use part of Hogan's appeal to what I call the everyman. And what I mean by that, Harold, I think people across the state said, you know, I could have a beer with Governor Larry Hogan. And many people did. And he also squashed the what I would call the narrative that Hogan was anti-black, anti-civil rights, anti-environment. And he's been elected twice. And that's not just by chance. In fact, what I would suggest to you, there are a lot of Democrats who like Hogan, okay? And they voted for him because he couldn't just win with Republicans.
So
in this race with Cox.
So let me ask you, Charles, right now, you know the old saying, as Prince George's and Baltimore go, so goes the state. Well, we know that there have been some economic changes in Central Maryland, where Prince George's is no longer the most affluent, predominantly African-American municipality. That has, you know, kind of fallen to Charles County. But Prince George's remains a massive political power, as does Baltimore. What impact
That's
do
Baltimore
you...
Baltimore County, not Baltimore City. Baltimore County.
I should say the Baltimore region. Yeah, absolutely. What impact do you believe those two regions will have tonight or tomorrow or, should I say, next week?
Right. Well, don't be surprised, Harold, when you start seeing the numbers come in for Charles County and Calvert County, that he wins a plurality. Like you, I traveled down that way. And let me tell you the thing that caught my eye early on. There were more black candidates running for statewide office in those two counties than I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other part was, let me talk about Westmore's ground game. You know where he wins? He wins in early voting. He did that in the primary. The other part was, when you have a crowded field like he was up against, endorsements were key. And let me tell you the one endorsement that his competitors wanted to get, and they didn't get. It was a teachers union. And he went down there. And let me just say, if you have never seen Wes Moore on the stump, he's good at it. He connects to people. And he was able to convince the teachers to endorse him and took that away from Peter Franchot and Tom Perez. And you cannot discount that. At the end, you remember in the primary, people were worried about how many votes were going to come out of Montgomery County. Last time I checked, there were seven guys running for governor out of Montgomery County. And if you got 25,000 votes out there, they ain't going to be split evenly.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, both Whitley and Ebony. I want to move away just from our area just for a moment. We've got the situation in Arizona and Nevada. Again, two states in these senatorial campaigns that could change the balance of power on Capitol Hill. Any concerns, Whitley?
No, I think Kerry is going to win the governor's race. I think that Arizona's kind of turned purple, to be honest. But one thing that we are noticing specifically in Arizona is that there are some really close state house races, like with Miss Lamar in Arizona State House 02. And so I think Republicans are going to once again take it back. It's just been a really interesting run in Arizona in particular post the McCain era. But I think right now where the state is and kind of how you're seeing them vote and lean, you're going to see Kerry win, and you're going to see other wins in Senate, in Congress, and State House for Republicans in Arizona as well.
Hmm. Your thoughts about these races out west, Ebony?
The Arizona case in particular, the biggest thing is I really look at Arizona because they are one of the top states that are, to me, leading in the big lie effort. We even see Kerry Lake and the Katie Hobbs case coming out and talking about all McCain Republicans can get the hell out. I think that we're seeing just the level of language that we're seeing coming out of Arizona. I also feel like kind of shows where we are, our temperament in this election for this year. Even when we look at what's happening in Arizona, as we have issues at the at some of the polling locations. We see denying going on there. Republicans, dozens of malfunctions we're seeing happening at some of the ballot counting machines in Maricopa County. But we're seeing, again, all these surge of voter fraud claims coming across, conspiracy theories coming across, doubling down on it. And so when I see that, and as I'm hearing it, to me kind of sets the tone of what we're going to see. Look, whether Republicans take the Senate right now, today was election day. Tomorrow, in my opinion, we're going to start seeing an even vigorous run for presidency. I say after the polls close here, tomorrow people are going to be looking at who's president. And so I think we're going to see an increase of vitriol language coming from many of these right-leaning states, Arizona being one of them. And so I think people need to kind of imagine what will things begin to look like in the next election.
Let me go back to you on that particular point, Whitley. How is, in your opinion, how is the Republican Party going to be able to handle a inter-party division? Because you're gonna have the MAGA folks, you're gonna have the election deniers, you're gonna have the folks who say,
yeah.
and then you have the Whitley Yates of the party who are more traditional. How are you going to handle the butting of heads within the party?
So that's an interesting question. I actually get asked that question all the time, and I find it to be so interesting because in the Republican Party, we don't maintain that everyone has to think the same, be the same, and believe the same. It's one of the beauties of this party is that we value this idea that your independent thoughts and your independent ideas should lead and govern you, which is why here in Indiana, you'll see supermajority Republicans sometimes, you know, disagree with the Republican governor. That is honestly who we are as a party, and we're made up of many of these different elements of diversity,
but not
just racial diversity, right, but diversity of thought. And so it's honestly something that we value, even if we don't always like it. And leaning into the uncomfortability and finding common ground and being in unity without uniformity is what makes our party so great. When sometimes on the other side, it's more about control, and everyone has to believe this way, and everyone has to do these specific things, because if you don't, then you're ostracized or you're put outside.
Yeah, but Whitley, hold on now. I mean, I think that's a great statement on January 5th, 2021, but not after January 6th, 2021. the Republican Party has changed, and you may have had some. I mean, you can go back and look at the history. Yeah, there may have been some symbolic, objections on Capitol Hill and during past presidential elections for the certification of votes, but you didn't have folks trying to, hang Mike Pence.
And who came in January 6th was not a bunch of Democrats.
I beg your pardon?
I said, who came in on January 6th we saw were far right Republicans.
But that's my point. That's my point. You do have some far right folks who are running.
And these officials who backed
the January 6ers and those that were willing to storm the Capitol and do those things are not the majority of the party, and that's just the truth. And so if you want the Republican Party to be just the party of January 6th, then you can believe that. But the truth of the matter is we are more than that, and there are people who thought that those actions, like me, were wrong and terrible and that there should be justice for those things. But we're, once again, not monolithic, and there are going to be people who believe that and they're willing to do what they did on January 6th. But we also have to be honest about some irregularities that we're also seeing right now. So in a country where our democracy is predicated on everyone being able to participate and have a say and have a voice, and we're consistently seeing these irregularities, i.e. New Jersey having issues with their Dominion software being shut down today, this year, Arizona having issues with software not being able to vote. These are the types of problems that we have that make people feel as though their votes don't count, that make people feel as though their voices aren't being heard. And I think it's incumbent upon those running for Secretary of State to make sure that not only the software that you use, but the processes in which people are able to vote reduce barriers, reduce any type of issue that would create this idea or feeling or issues that there's a problem. And we're seeing it across the board. And if our democracy is predicated on this one day, on this one act, and we're having irregularities and people not being able to vote and standing in line for hours and systems shutting down, it would make one feel as though there would be that there's an issue.
Ebony.
But January 6th wasn't just one day. January 6th was the culmination of an entire shift, and I don't even say shift. January 6th was a culmination of an entire move that has been happening within our election system. And when you go from, first of all, let me just go back to the elections, first of all. There has not been one case where anyone has been able to point towards election fraud. And I feel like sometimes Republicans will switch to that, but then they'll step right over a restrictions on voting rights. And so we talk about, I mean, it's almost like switching up the language. You skip over that. You skip over.
I didn't skip over fraud. I mentioned irregularities that you have yet to acknowledge.
Okay. Ebony, go ahead. Finish your point.
Right. No. So I think even before you even get to that, you're talking about, I was trying to understand what you thought January 6th, what that was about. You keep referring it, you refer to it, as just one day, as if it didn't have lasting effects. And even when we saw
as one day, the election is one day. Our democracy is predicated on this one day having an election. The entire democratic process is predicated on this one day, the election day, not January 6th. I think you misunderstood.
I probably did. I apologize for that. But I don't see how you can look at some of the moves that we've seen by the Republican Party when it comes to hampering on rights, whether it's abortion, whether it's voting rights, whether it's even gun sensibility laws, and you don't think that there, or let me ask you, if you think there's even a problem with that.
Well, let me ask this, because, yeah, Charles, I've got to let you have the last word, but please go ahead.
And that is, I happen to be in Las Vegas for about 2 weeks during the summer. And what a lot of people on the East Coast fail to miss was the price of gas out west and the lack of water. Mm. That has put a strain on every political party in Western states. And it means that a lot of folks' angst was up. Because if you think about it from this perspective, the water situation out west is dire. In addition to that, they're paying anywhere from $6 to $7 a gallon for gas, which has meant that everything is exorbitant. And people blame whoever's in power for that.
Yeah. That and I think you do make a great point. Politics really has to do with the perspective of the people. You can talk about the drought out west, or you can talk about the issue in Jackson, Mississippi. Two totally different things, but both of them having to do with water. People talk about the election, the Senate election in Pennsylvania, and a lot of people talk about crime, but you already have in one case you have a Republican senator whose seat was seat is now up for grabs. So I think that we need to wait, as we said in the beginning, and we will continue to wait, not just tonight, not just tomorrow, but even next week, maybe even next month. That is the fun of American politics. But I want to thank you all, Whitley Yates, Charles Robinson, Ebony McMorris. Also, I want to thank had so many people, Charles Ellison from the B Note, for being on the program earlier. Thank you all so very, very much. Be safe, and we will be in touch.
Be well.
Thank you.
All right. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, November 8th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.